This is the Gemini Ransom Effect.
Welcome back to the Gemini Ransom Effect on 107.1 FM. You're listening to GRE with Triple D, with an exception.
Double D's J.
I like it. It's got a ring to it. Yeah,
it does.
It's got a ring to it. Devin, did you hear that? It has a ring.
Just rolls off.
So, listen, I'm going to say that at some point the insurance doctor is going to say, whoa, back up, and let's look at who sponsors this show.
That's right. We may be getting ahead of ourselves.
Okay, we may have jumped the curve.
I will be glad to resign my post at this station right here for a small donation.
Oh, hey, is that a challenge to the insurance doctor?
That is a challenge. I will throw that out there. $2,500 or less. I mean...
So that is great. So before the break, Jeremy was just kind of walking us through a lot that's going on with the Lions baseball. And I know, like we said before, Jim and I, we just have a passion for, you know, Little League and sports and baseball in general. And we just love it. So we love what you're doing. We're excited that you have come on the show. We appreciate you being here talking about the Lions baseball.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be out here and express what we've got going on out there.
Yeah, so we got a very, very important question.
Okay, I'm all for it.
Are you ready? All right, so before I get through my main question, we're gonna tease a little bit.
Okay.
We talked about the differences with Dixie Youth and Little League and stuff like that. And just for the people that don't really know, and myself included, you know, what are some of the biggest rule differences, you know, that you can expect with Dixie Youth?
For the most part, most of the rules are the same. Baseball's the same throughout, and once you get from certain age to certain age. The only difference, really, between Little League and Dizzy Dean or Cal Ripken or Dixie Youth is that we start our pitching at a younger age than most of them do. Mm-hmm. Most of them start at 9, 10, where they do kid pitch. We actually start at our peewee age, which is our 8U, 6, 7, 8-year-olds. So we go through that. Our T-ball, for example, is no longer a T-ball. You get to start on a tee, but at the end of the season, you better be off the tee and having coach pitch. So we're more advanced, more challenging, and, you know, try to do a little bit more to get the kids to understand what it's like to play actual real baseball. Once you get into the 9, 10-year-olds, you can start to steal. Of course, that's once the pitch has been thrown, you have the opportunity to steal. And then after that, it's traditional baseball. Pickoffs, balks, everything you need.
What type of limitations you guys put on your pitchers as far as pitch count, innings, and stuff like that?
We just adopted this season the MLB pitch count, the Pitch Smart solutions. We actually have certified. We are certifying all of our coaches through that process.
Dude, that is phenomenal, y'all doing
that. And the reason is that we want these kids to be healthy growing throughout.
Right.
You know, you'll see a lot of things where you talk about kids and you guys talked about travel ball. Mm-hmm. And travel ball, you get to go do different things. And I was talking to a gentleman the other day who was telling me that they played 70-something games in a season. Well, you know, we're a 12 to 16-game season because we're a rec league. But the arms on those kids, I mean, they just wear out so easily.
Right.
So it's good to have them play other sports. We recommend, if you can't play, you know, if you don't want to play here the fall in the spring season, go play football, go play basketball.
Right.
Do something else to stretch that arm in a different direction than what you normally do. But we do have pitch counts. We do have rest counts. If you pitch a certain amount in peewee, I think it's 50 pitches, you got to rest 40 hours. So you can play, you just can't pitch.
You can't pitch or catch. Yep. And that's what I tell the parents on our teams is that, like, you know, we'll play into the summer, but after that, we're done.
Yeah.
And then y'all, you know, if they want to play something else, they can, you know, and then, you know, come back, you know, towards the end of December, 1st of January, we'll get back up on it again. But, you know, you got to have a break from it and for lots of reasons.
Absolutely.
You know, and especially with pitching in your arm and just doing something else.
Well, you know, and to talk about that, and I know where you're about to go with the next question, and I'll just give you a little preview now, is I have had one parent ask me what's the recommended age for Tommy John surgery? And this parent,
that is awesome. Yeah.
So are you asking to be
proactive about what you're doing?
Right. Yeah, I mean, what, you know, and as I am a certified doctor of nothingness, I gave my professional advice on that and told them usually 7 or 8 is usually a good age.
Yes, perfect.
Hey,
perfect.
Good answer. That's what I would have chosen.
Absolutely.
So that does lead me to the most important question of the day. I need to know what is the best parent story that you have.
I've had I've got two stories, and one involves a parent, one involves an umpire. The first is a parent story that I had a there was an altercation on the field. Nothing physical, nothing. Just a coach disagreed with a call, and mom up in the scorebook decided, or up in the press box decided she wasn't happy with the call. And as she completed her sentences, I can't say any of them. Are we live radio here? Or
yes.
You can just bleep everything I say from now on. She expressed in a new language that I've never heard before.
Yeah, here we go.
There were more four-letter words than anything else in that sentence. Her displeasure with the call. And then her ejection from the game was the, why am I being ejected? I didn't make the bad call.
No, yeah, of course.
No, it was the salty language that now every kid will go to school and write sentences right. about. So, but the best story, and this doesn't involve me, this actually involves Charles Maddox. For those who don't know Charles Maddox, Charles was a very fair individual. He was a very outgoing individual, really loved and passionate about the game of baseball and the kids that played there, but also a man that didn't take a lot of crap. And there was an umpire who obviously was having a bad day, and this was this must have been late 80s, early 90s, and somebody had one of the assistant coaches had been ejected from the game. Well, that assistant coach that was ejected was the vice president of the park, and so Charles comes, you know, Charles is in the concession stand, and the vice president walks in and says, "Hey, man, I just got ejected from the game," and so Charles walks over, watches the game for a few more minutes, and this umpire has either, I don't know if he's drunk or whatever was going on. It's just making calls that, I mean, you might as well have had your eyes closed, your back to the field, and you know, a foul ball was a fair ball, and an out was a strike. I mean, just left and right calls. Well, Charles walks back in the concession stand, grabs $25, $30, whatever the man's pay was for the amount of game he did, walks right on the field. Obviously, this man does not know Charles Maddox at all. Says, so, you know, he's screaming at him, "Well, sir, what are you doing on the field? It's a baseball game. Why are you out here?" And he says, "My name is Charles Maddox. I am the director of this park, and you can get your," you got that bleep ready for me? "You can get your tail off this field and never come back." Well, the umpire doesn't know what to do here, and so he immediately starts jumping back out. And at that point, Charles Maddox, just like a man, just takes that $25 and just shoves it in the man's face and basically walks him out to the field. And I've never in my life, you know, and I've never met Charles other than a long time ago. And just hearing the stories about what this man did, you know, it's so out of character for him. But to have someone make baseball bigger than it is and make the umpire, I mean, we see it all the time in professional right. sports. But just a great story of how you're not going to upstage these kids.
Right, and that's what it's about. And a lot of times, you know, you have, especially, you know, David and I have coached a lot of
rec ball over there.
Yeah. And a lot of times you'll have the umpires come up to you and say, "Look, you know, these kids are, you know, 5 and 6 years old or whatever the case may be. We know we're going to have fun. We're going to learn." And we've had umpires that after somebody made a mistake, you'll see the umpire go over there and tell him what he did wrong.
Yep.
And
yep.
how, you know, oh, yeah. that's the kind of stuff that at that age I really love to see. But it's, you know, we have
– it's about learning and development.
Yeah,
it's also about teaching them how to win, teaching them how to lose.
Yeah.
Because you're
right.
going to lose. There's got to be one or the other.
It's the same. David hasn't learned how to lose yet.
Listen, I don't do well with
it. So, me. Listen, I'm gonna put something out there for the parents.
No.
Okay? Baseball parents, pay attention. If you disagree with a call and you feel – that it's an intelligent decision to start yelling at the top of your lungs at the umpire and arguing about the call, and the umpire is going back and forth with you like a couple of children. If you think that's a great idea for your child's team, you're sadly mistaken, because I'm going to tell you what. If you think that umpire is going to now have the impression or his mindset is now going to be, "Whoa, I better give them a call later because that was a bad call." No, that's not how it works. That guy now has it out for your team. I mean, that's just natural instinct.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is. You let the coaches handle it. You know, you screaming from the sidelines to the umpire doesn't help your kid's team. There's a little bit of a soapbox here, but shut your mouth.
Well, preach on.
Know your role.
Know your role.
Know your role.
Shut your mouth.
Shut your mouth.
Well, and it's got to come from the coach as well. The coach has got to keep the parents in check, and he's got to make sure that everyone understands where that is. You know, we've got some really good umpires out here, and I've seen some who are very committed to.
Well, sometimes in travel ball, the parents bring coolers. There's not always Gatorade in those coolers.
And listen, travel ball is a very heavily funded sport by the parents as well.
That's
so,
right.
You know, they feel like they have ownership.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you're not paying the umpires.
I was going to ask you, though, When is y'all's spring season already closed for signups?
Yep, it is closed. We, you know, the season continues to move backwards and backwards. We actually opened online registration back in December.
I noticed that.
And we actually closed it out January 30th and had evaluations January 31st, 30th and 31st. Our draft was on the 31st.
Wow.
So
did y'all do how much y'all normally charge?
It's 115 for anything that's ages that's a competitive league.
And for you, it's 2.25.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
2.5.
And then it's 150 for the 13 and up, and then the rookie ball is $85.
Yeah, that provides
that provides a jersey, a hat, game balls, a trophy, and playing experience.
Umpires and insurance.
Umpires and insurance, absolutely.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of insurance.
Yeah.
Oh,
the insurance doctor.
Yeah, <there's.
laughs> so yeah, and the funniest thing is one of the travel teams I have is an 8-year-old team, okay. eight and under, and a lot of these kids, you know, they've played all stars,
yeah,
and,
absolutely,
you know, a lot of all star, but they haven't really played a lot of travel ball. I mean, they're eight. So this first, we went to a tournament. They kept saying they wanted to play. So we went to a tournament, our first tournament ever. And just got it handed to us,
okay.
You know, and it was an experience they needed to see the difference in the speed of the game, the difference of the talent level across the field, you know, all those things. And after losing all three of our games, we were walking back to the car, you know, and getting ready to get out of there. And one of the boys comes up and he goes, "Where's our trophy?" I'm like, "Hey, this is a different ball game, buddy. You don't win, you don't get anything.
Yeah,
you know?
We've got cupcakes for you. You get your snack." Yeah.
Got a pat on the back, kid. Yeah.
Hey,
take
good
it to
job.
The house.
Next time, get your glove on the ground.
Don't let that ball go between your legs anymore. You don't get a trophy for that.
Yeah. Last season, we took our 6U team and to the All Stars, and nothing better than having an umpire who was definitely in it for the home team. And I've never been ejected from a post game. We made it all the way through the game. I believe that's the game we won, and it was actually against Parkview. And of course, that right there was the biggest upset in the world that a little Bexar County team had beaten Parkview. And you literally, I mean, as we're shaking hands, the umpire reaches over to the Parkview guy, grabs his cash that he obviously was looking for, and you know, we called him out on a couple things. And post game handshakes, the umpire ejects us and the entire coaching staff. All right.
Okay, I'm going home anyway. Yeah, whatever.
I'm done for the day, so we're good. We'll see you tomorrow.
Appreciate it, man. Good call. Good call.
But,
call. Well, good deal, man. Jeremy, we appreciate you stopping in. Hopefully, you'll stay out with us for the rest of the show.
Yeah, hang out.
Chime
with
in.
I thought I was part of the show now.
You are, man. No, you are.
I was about to ask, how long have we been doing the show now, Jeremy?
This would be episode number one for me, so we're going to start fresh.
I'll tell you what.
Start anew.
It feels like we've been doing the show forever. It's like
episode 1B.
It's like Devin's not never even should have been here.
Who's Devin?
See what I'm saying?
I just forgot for a second. There.
Now, Devin, if you're out there listening, I appreciate your donation to the park. So I,
you know who Devin is? He's the guy that walked across that field and gave that umpire the money.
That's right. Yeah, nobody has a like.
Here you
Devin.
Go, buddy. Here you go. Good job. All right, so let's get we'll start off into the sports segment.
And it's going. Yeah, I'm excited to hear some.
Let's
of these
do it. Stories. We got some of this stuff here. So let's do it. Let's get it started.
Oh, we're waiting for Professor D to load up. Look at it.
There it is.
A small part of life.
Sports.
See, he's got me.
Because he's a good guy at sports.
Got me trained. Like I physically cannot start until I hear my intro. It's just,
I don't blame
what
you.
It is. So, start off in the UFC, MMA.
Yes.
You recall a kind of a pioneer in the sport, Kevin Randleman.
No,
I do really?
Okay. Is this from the MMA, the videos that I used to rent at Blockbuster, where the guy had like one boxing glove on and one bare knuckle?
That was back when it started.
The World Series of Fighting?
Yeah. Kevin Randleman was one of the early pioneers of the sport. And as a matter of fact, he first appeared in UFC 19.
Oh, wow.
So he's one of the older guys that started, and actually in his third fight won the heavyweight championship. So he is a former heavyweight champion, and great big guy. Yeah, you probably, once you see him, you're like, oh, that guy. He always had the dyed blonde hair. So
of course he did.
But
of course he did.
On the 11th of this month, Kevin Randleman actually passed away from a heart failure after complications with pneumonia.
Oh, wow.
So, He was 44.
Wow. I mean, that's young.
Yeah, 44, man. He was really young. Kevin was an early heavyweight champion in the UFC in its early days of existence. He first appeared in UFC 19. He was also in UFC 20, 23, 26, 28, 31, and 35.
Wow.
Yeah, he became the UFC heavyweight champion at UFC 23 by beating Pete Williams, who was another bigger name there from the older guys. And Randleman eventually lost the title at UFC 28 to the legend, Randy Couture.
Oh, okay, man.
Yeah, Randy
nice.
Couture took him down. Randleman has had a little bit of history of drug test issues and some suspensions and illnesses and injuries and maybe a DUI arrest in there at one point. So he's had his ups and downs. But in his career, he fought in the UFC, he fought in Strikeforce and Pride FC as well. And he has notable wins in his career against Pete Williams, Pedro Rizzo, Renato Babalu Sobral, and Murilo Hua, and Mirko Krokop.
So oh, okay.
So wins over a lot of those guys. Yeah. Some of those
remember that fight?
Big names.
Krokop was in and broke his leg.
Yeah.
That was nasty.
So his career record was 17. Listen, the 17-16 was his record, but listen to some of his losses, some of the people he's lost to. So one of his losses was to Boss Rutten, who was also one of the big pioneers in Pride and UFC. Randy Couture, Chuck Liddell.
Oh, Iceman.
Rampage Jackson. Sakuraba. Fedor Emelianenko. Ron Waterman. Mirko Krokop. And Shogun Hua.
Okay, yeah. So
And also Roger Gracie.
Wow.
So those are all of his 16 losses. Those are eight or nine of them right there.
Pretty significant names.
Absolutely. So he fought the best, you know.
Yeah.
Didn't Rampage Jackson play B.A. Baracus in the remake of
He did.
Yes,
he did. Yes, he did. He tried.
Tried. Yeah.
He tried to, yeah.
Not enough gold.
I'll tell you, if any of you out there get a chance to search a video of Kevin Randleman, if you'll search the video of him slamming Fedor in Pride, the Pride match they had, it's one of the worst slams I've ever seen. I mean, just like German suplex over his head. It was crazy. But Kevin the Monster Randleman, dead at 44.
Wow.
So
way to start sports off
on a high note.
Well, he's not done yet.
I'm not done.
Go to the other MMA situation.
We can go lower.
I mean, just saying. I mean, the way you bring stories to the table.
I need you to focus.
The excitement.
You're delaying the inevitable.
Squirrel. Squirrel.
So we're going to stay with the UFC, okay? Staying in the UFC.
You're welcome, Dana White.
Ronda Rousey. You know who that one is, right?
Love me some Ronda.
I've heard the name once or twice.
Yes, you do.
She's on the cover of a magazine right now.
Yeah.
She's that actress in Entourage, right?
Housekeeping, something like that.
Yeah. Fast and Furious.
Yeah. Ronda Rousey, she was on the Ellen DeGeneres show recently and said that she considered suicide after losing her UFC bantamweight championship to Holly Holm back in November.
What? Are you kidding?
That's what she said. And she didn't just lose. She lost decisively.
Yeah, that wasn't a good fight for her.
Not good.
Believe it or not, she actually looked worse than David Jackson did after Brandy got through with him.
The eye. Oh, the eye.
Did
she need a dab and napkin?
A whole sheet.
So she said, this is what she said. So she said she was lying in the Melbourne, Australia hospital after the fight. And she was in the hospital, if that tells you anything. And she said she wanted to kill herself because she thought without the title, no one cared about her anymore. That was her immediate reaction. She said what brought her out of it was the face of her boyfriend and current UFC fighter, Travis Brown. He's a heavyweight. So, but he did, she did say that, but kind of snapped her back from the brink. Now, I mean, this comment has obviously sparked a lot of comments from athletes in all different sports. But there are a couple that I just wanted to touch on a little bit.
Okay.
I wanted to bring some
attention. Feel bad for Ronda, first of all. Hang on a second, because I love her, but she got the crap kicked out of her.
She did.
Okay.
She did. All right, so when we come back, we'll talk about the two quotes from other athletes and in response to Ronda Rousey's comments. So, but come back and join us. You've been listening to the Gemini Ransom Effect on 107.1 WJUB.
This is the Gemini Ransom Effect.